Blog Talk Radio.
Jersey's premier zone with Professor Fernando Uribe and New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, the PBR superstar, Patrick Rivera. Coming to you live from the Blog Talk Radio studios, folks, in the heart of Hudson County. You know it's always in Union City and Weehawken collectively. This is Work in the Marks, and I am New Jersey's premier award-winning journalist, the professor, Fernando Uribe, and he is the PBR superstar. Yes, the great Patrick Rivera joining us here as we host another great episode here on Blog Talk Radio. What's going on, PBR?
Nah, I'm just your Mark friend, you know?
That's right. You are my Mark
friend. I'm just your Mark friend.
That's right.
Yeah, in some circles, I'm just your Mark friend, you know?
Nah, but yeah.
I appreciate the other intro. What's that?
No, what were you saying? What were you saying?
Oh yeah, no. I'm just your Mark friend. So, and when I talk about AEW this episode,
I'm gonna probably use this voice because I think it's a little bit more sensitive for some of the AEW fans. And maybe they might not think I'm such a bad guy after all if I talk like that. Okay?
I'm loving the voice, folks. Again, always write to us. We got some questions to answer on the air a little bit later. So again, always feel free to write to the show. We love to hear your feedback. WorkInTheMarks@gmail.com. Once again, WorkInTheMarks@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram @working_the_marks. Of course, check out our own personal Instagrams for the PBR superstar. Make sure you check them out @PaddyRican, @PaddyRican. And of course, on my own Instagram, again, when I'm not shadow banned by Zuckerberg, as he's admitted on Joe Rogan's show, @TheFernandoZone. So make sure you check us out there. And also on Twitter, ladies and gentlemen, make sure you check out the great PBR superstar at his Twitter. It is at, make sure I get it correctly here because sometimes I don't always write
at
it down.
Patrick Scum. It's at Patrick Scum, SKVM.
There you go, @PatrickSKVM. And of course, check out my own Twitter again when Jack Dorsey's not shadow banning us on Twitter as well, @TheFernandoZone also. Make sure you check. Well, it's true, though, you know. Jack Dorsey and Zuckerberg are
right.
Fucking scumbags.
I bet. Yeah, the Loch Ness Monster is true to some people, too, you know.
Well, you know, hey, people believe in Santa Claus, you know. What can I tell you, you know? Also, folks, make sure you like us on Facebook. Certainly a big shout-out to our administrator, D. Rotten, for just really helping accelerate our traffic. New theme song to the show, courtesy of D. Rotten. So we love you, man. We appreciate all of your hard work on the show. And, again, without him, a lot of the, you know, what we do on this program isn't really possible. Of course, getting us on Blog Talk Radio, getting us on Google Podcasts, Spotify. So, again, we're very, very grateful to D. Rotten. And, again, folks, write to us, always workinthemarks@gmail.com. We want to hear from you and what you like about the show, what you don't like about the show, what annoys you about Pat, what annoys you about me. I'm sure there's, who knows, there are weeks when we outdo the other. Who knows? But again, folks, always write to us. We love your feedback. Pat, a lot to unpackage here. Obviously, last weekend, Labor Day weekend, three wrestling shows, which was great to see if you're a wrestling fan. I did not have a chance to sit down and watch them as they were live. I was out in Vegas, but I caught a lot of the highlights and replays. And let's start off with the Castle show. I think it was an amazing show out in Wales. Tremendous facility. Certainly, you know, it had been 30 years since the WWF/WWE now had been in the United Kingdom for a live show of this magnitude. Hey, great turnout. I'm sure the merch sales were through the roof. Fans were into that show the entire time. What'd you like about it? What didn't you like about it?
Okay, so while you were busy having the time of your life and you never felt that way before, all right, I was hanging back here in the Garden State, putting in the fucking hard yards, all right, watching all this wrestling, because believe me, there was a lot of wrestling, and I appreciate all the interaction out there on Instagram, You know, again, we thank you so much for following us, for supporting what we do. But yeah, I mean, the show itself was fantastic. The facility is actually the stadium that the Welsh national team uses, the football team, for all of their international matches and stuff like that. So it's a top-notch facility. And it was crazy because going into this, there was a lot of rumblings about this event not selling out, or this event not meeting the quota that they were trying to meet in terms of attendance. But they still ended up with 62,000, you know, close to around 63,000, which is pretty darn good. And the event itself I thought was really, really good. The things that really jumped out to me, I mean, you know, all of it was good, like I said. You know, I don't have any gripes with any of it. I thought the show itself went well. I know there was a lot of marks complaining about what happened with Drew, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. For me, the thing that really just jumped out was Matt Riddle and Seth Rollins. The way they worked together, the story they told, you know, Matt being this, you know, young, up-and-coming guy taking on Seth, who's a wily veteran, and, you know, him being able to hang with him, but getting a little too overzealous and Seth making him pay. And, you know, I thought both of them put on a fantastic match. I thought they worked very, very well together. I thought the psychology was great. They laid in a lot of stiff shots. Matt Riddle just continues to take his game up to the next level more and more. I mean, like, every time we see the guy out there, he's just getting better and better. And I feel slowly but surely they're going to kind of start veering away from the whole, you know, Jeff Spicoli, stoner bro thing. And I think he's going to kind of slowly keep a little bit of that, but, you know, become a lot more serious. Because, you know, as we all know with his background, he's a pretty serious guy. He's a pretty legit dude and can kick a lot of ass if need be. But, yeah, the match to me was tremendous. And you know what? I'll even say the main event was great. I thought the main event was awesome. I thought it was very well produced. Drew and Roman went out there. I mean, just beat the crap out of each other. Had a great match. I mean, they really haven't had many bad matches together, I'll be honest, because every time they work, they always bring it. And, you know, obviously the debut of Solo Sikoa at the end of the match, and then, you know, having Tyson Fury get involved. You know, knocking out Austin Theory in his attempted cash-in. And then just the whole big bow and the whole big package, you know, for the audience there. And I know some people complained about the booking, but again, I think, you know, we'll probably end up talking about that at some point before we're done with this segment here. But for me, overall, great show. Really enjoyed what Matt Riddle and what Seth Rollins did. Enjoyed the main event. All the matches I thought were pretty stacked overall. Liv Morgan, I mean, man. Every time she goes out there, she gets better and better, you know. Her and Shayna had a great match. And, yeah, overall, I just thought the whole card was really, really good.
I'm with you, bro. Top to bottom, great, great card. Again, here's the mark in me. Love seeing the full names again. Matt Riddle, of course, and everything else that were, you know, the marks like me love. But great show. Didn't have a chance to watch it live, but as I was getting ready for dinner, out in Vegas, I was looking at the replay on Peacock. Fortunately, it didn't take like 7 hours to watch it with the 35,000 ads, but a solid show, like you said, top to bottom. I'll say right now, I think the match that really stood out for me was Gunther and Sheamus. I mean, I think they beat the piss out of each other, and it was everything you expected in that match. I think, you know, listen, I've never been the biggest Sheamus fan. I understand the purpose he serves. He's been a dependable worker. Never been great to me on the mic per se. I think this is his best work lately, being part of the Battling Brutes faction. But without a doubt, you knew that was going to be a knockdown drag out. The crowd was solidly, obviously, behind Sheamus because of proximity, you know, geography. And, you know, listen, I think that's a great feud. As you saw, obviously, on SmackDown this past weekend, Imperium reforming that at Clash of the Castle, I think was great because I like that. I love that faction. I think that the tag team, I think, is very underrated, but good to see this. I hope they continue it. I mean, obviously, you know, we don't want to see this feud for like 9 months per se, but I think it's great. I think it'll, you know, certainly continue to pique interest. At some point, maybe Sheamus gets the rematch, maybe gets to go over on Gunther and win that elusive intercontinental, you know, heavyweight championship that he has yet to win in his career, in his Hall of Fame career. I mean, we'll see, but overall a great show. And to your point about attendance, listen, whether it's in the UK, whether it's BK, whether it's, you know, wherever on this planet, you know, WWE knows how to draw a crowd. They know how to maximize their potential when it comes to a show. And, you know, listen, even in this new regime now of Paul Levesque overseeing creative, I mean, clearly the fans are taking a liking to it. You know, the ratings are telling us that. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But a good show overall. Obviously, later that weekend, I mean, the Worlds Collide show was great with NXT, you know, the third brand in WWE, in my opinion. But as we know, that's always been a point of contention. Great show there. Obviously, Mandy Rose unifying the women's championships was great. For me, I'm being a big Mandy Rose fan. I'll tell you, if anyone's improved in the last, I would say, 16 to 18 months in WWE, I mean, I'll tell you, it's going to be hard to find someone better than Mandy Rose, bro. That woman has improved infinitely since we first saw her some years ago. You know, a fitness model, you know, the eye candy. She's still eye candy, believe me. I'd love to, you know, have her garnish my wages after having a child with her. But infinitely improved, a good show overall. And then we moved to All Out. Obviously, what was it, like 21 matches? It felt like it, I guess, when you watch the replay. You know, I got to tell you, it was quite laborious. I mean, people in Chicago, obviously, listen, that market is to the AEW crowd and demographic to what New York is for WWE, whether it's the Garden, whether it's Prudential Center, you know, for a long time, the Continental Airlines Arena in East Rutherford to now Barclays, to even now all the way out in Belmont in Long Island, you know, the new UBS Arena. I mean, Chicago seems to be that center of the AEW galaxy. You know, again, I would argue, Pat, a long show, nothing really spectacular per se. A lot of the matches had their spot fest like we expected. You know, I certainly didn't mind Jericho and Danielson. Obviously, we knew Danielson was going to carry that match. I didn't like Jericho going over, but I understand why it was booked that way. Very anticlimactic about the Trios Tag Team Tournament Finals with the Elite going over there and winning. I think the Swerve Strickland, Keith Lee tag title match against the Acclaimed, I would argue, I think that was the match of the night as far as I'm concerned. I think it kept the fans at the edge of their seat. I think the fans were really, really hot in that match. I think more so than really any other match, because by the end of the night, when it came to Moxley and Punk in the main event, I think people were a little deflated. They had been there for so many hours. But I would argue that was probably my highlight of the evening for All Out. What'd you think? What'd you like? What didn't you like?
So let me start with NXT first, developmental. And with NXT, you know, the show, again, very well produced. I mean, everything made sense by the time it was done. Ricochet and Carmelo Hayes, I thought, was a really, really awesome match. I mean, those two match up very, very well. Obviously, Ricochet is just, in my opinion, the best high flyer out there in the biz. I mean, the guy is just, what can he do? And more importantly, he could just do it over and over again, same way, same bump, same ring positioning. He's a true pro. When people talk about Will Ospreay and Ricochet, I got to go with Ricochet, man. I'm sorry, because Ricochet is just so immensely talented. They both lack Mike's skills. Ospreay is kind of doing the cheap heat thing, but whatever. But that match was really solid. The tag team match I thought was really, really good. The Creed brothers, man, I mean, you know, you're talking about Mandy Rose. I was talking about Liv Morgan before, people who have improved, you know, so much over the last, you know, couple of months or so, or the last 18 months or so. I mean, and those guys have just really grown into their level. That match was awesome. Pretty Deadly, too. Another great team, great character work with them. They ended up going over. Solid stuff. You know, with the dude turning on the Diamond Mine, I forgot his name. He looks like Bear, Solo Sikoa kind of deal. And then the main event, man, between Bron Breakker and Tyler Bate. You know, just a really, really solid match between the two of them. Tyler Bate, just, man, a ring general, like, beyond his years. This kid's been there for so long. He's been in the system since he's a teenager, and he just gets better and better. And obviously, you know, star-making moment there for Braun to kind of help gear him in that direction where we know he's inevitably going to be heading in. But just a solid match from those guys.
So, as far as AEW goes, because I get a lot of heat when I talk about AEW, some people say that I talk about AEW in a hateful way, so that's why I'm going to start using this voice, at least as long as I can until my voice craps out for me. But the AEW show, I wasn't really into it. I'll say this much. The Acclaimed Tag Team match, that was really good. The crowd was into that. They were very hot for that. The MJF thing in the ladder match, they ended up botching that. They dropped the ball on it completely, okay? For me, I just felt like there could have been a different way to keep him off of TV and then have him come back out or keep the mystery going until they get to TV on Wednesday. Danielson and Jericho was just horrible, horrible. Was not into it. Was not good. Danielson tried. Chris Jericho needs to stop working gimmicks that he worked when he was 25. I think, you know, he should be done with that. And the main event was just flat. It was boring. It was awful. I did not think any of it was very good. And CM Punk winning or CM Butch wasn't very good, in my opinion. And I don't think that he deserves to be the champion.
I hope I didn't offend any AEW fans. But I figured if I said it in that voice and I was hard, it would be a little bit easier to bear the blow for them, because they're all very sensitive.
Pat, just do what I do on Monday nights. I said what I said. Be offended. That's it. I say it all the time. You know, let's do it on this show as well.
you can keep your gimmicks to yourself. But thanks for the advice.
But no, listen. I think you hit the nail on the head. Apparently, the buy rates were good from what I'm reading on WrestleNomics. And again, even that I take with a grain of salt. I don't think that is gospel or scripture per se, but. You know, one of those cards where, again, All Out is AEW's WrestleMania. That's their big show. It's Labor Day weekend. And it's kind of interesting. I mean, we'll get to a little bit of what made AEW All Out so interesting, obviously, after the show. But it was, you know, it was peculiar to see Tony Khan, bro, so indignant during the media scrum, which I know got a lot of attention, certainly in not just pro wrestling circles, but even mainstream pop culture circles, where Tony Khan felt very slighted about, you know, All Out has been a staple event for them during Labor Day weekend since the company started. It's not something that, again, in the minds of AEW fans or even people that work at AEW, was ever something that WWE had on their radar, right? Like, forever, we've always had SummerSlam in late August. Now, obviously, that changed this year. It was in late July. Of course, certainly, I think it was established that WWE wanted a little bit of a buffer zone between the Castle show in Wales and SummerSlam. They got that. But Tony Khan was really indignant, man, about the fact that, like, hey, why is WWE doing this? You know, I mean, obviously, they did it to Crockett. And, of course, you know, for anyone who's not familiar, certainly, this was going back to 1987. You know, Starrcade had been a staple event for the NWA at the time, you know, before they became and transitioned to WCW. Starrcade was that premier event on Thanksgiving. It was shown around closed circuit television around the country. Again, pay-per-view was still in its infancy stage, ladies and gentlemen. Obviously, we had, you know, WrestleMania the year before, WrestleMania II, first time it was on pay-per-view. And, you know, going back to 1987, Vince McMahon debuted the Survivor Series on Thanksgiving night. We've all read the testimonials that Vince was kind of holding a lot of cable companies over a barrel about, hey, listen, carry our stuff or we're not going to make our content available. I mean, obviously, that's what's been reported. And certainly from that point on, right, well, what did the NWA do? The following year in 88, on the day of WrestleMania IV, they debuted Clash of the Champions. So it's always been semantics, I think, by wrestling companies over the years. Obviously, I think that stopped from 1988 on, you know, once it transitioned to WCW, both companies made a point to not have pay-per-views on the same day or the same weekends. But I think Tony Khan took exception to that. WWE now has been doing, well, they did it for the first time, and it probably won't be the last time. So I found Tony Khan's outrage to be, I get it, it's his company, but he referenced Jim Crockett, God rest his soul, and what he had to undergo because of Vince McMahon. And he was very emphatic, Pat, that, well, he has more money than Jim Crockett, so he's ready to fight this war. I don't know if Tony Khan wants to go up that alley and sort of pick a fight there, bro.
Oh, my God. Wait, so let me ask you a question. When he said this, was this before or after he got emasculated by CM Punk and got treated like a fucking lapdog?
Oh, way after. I mean, CM Punk already went to the locker
after.
Room.
Way after, okay.
And, yeah, it was way after. And obviously, well, I mean, we'll talk about when CM Punk left the media scrum and left Tony alone. We'll talk about what happened after that. But, yes, no question.
So,
he was
very emasculated. Tony was just, I mean, bro. I mean, come on, man. Anybody that's got eyes can see that. So now this guy, you know, probably because he doesn't want to tell his favorite wrestler to shut the fuck up. He doesn't want to be mean to him because he loves him. And, you know, he's still got a bunch of stuff he probably wants to autograph for him. So Tony Khan going off about this kind of stuff is absolutely ridiculous because, number one, WWE don't care about him, bro. They're running fucking their events. They had one event the day before and the other one was, like, what, 2-3 hours before his? If anything, you know what both companies were doing? They were giving to the fans. They created a great wrestling weekend where they knew fans would be off, where they knew people would be home to be able to watch this content, and they gave it to them. What's wrong with that, right? What's wrong with that? Now, as far as the, you know, Jim Crockett comment, Jim Crockett, Davy Crockett, Betty Crocker, King Kong Bundy, it don't matter, Tony Khan, whoever, okay? If your product is good and you feel like your product is really, really good, then you shouldn't be afraid of competition. You shouldn't be afraid of people trying to see, you know, what you're about or if they could take their product to your product. Competition makes everything better. You know what I'm saying? You take a look at the Attitude Era, you know? You take a look at sports, rivalries, you know? It only makes teams better, you know? I mean, perfect example today. You're obviously a devout member of the whatever the Cowboys call themselves.
Cowboys Nation, sir. Cowboys Nation. Yes, Cowboys Nation.
Cowboys Nation. All right, that thing. And I'm a 49er fan, big 49er fan, member of the faithful, right? Some of the best times of football were when those teams were feuding and facing each other constantly, right? That rivalry was awesome, and it made for great football, and it made for great television, right? So if Tony Khan is so confident in his product, and Tony Khan feels like he has such a great alternative product, then you shouldn't be afraid to take on the heat because you're providing something different than what they are. But, to quote the late, great Rick James, cocaine's a hell of a drug. So I don't know, man. I just thought that was really tacky on his part, and I think he maybe might have done it to divert from the fact that he just got sung by his top star, you know, on YouTube. So, yeah, more paranoia, bro. Drugs are bad. That's all I got to say.
No, absolutely, absolutely. And, again, we'll, certainly without a doubt, it won't be the last time that dual shows are on by different companies and whatever. I mean, listen, let's be honest, okay? Going back to, I mean, did anybody complain WrestleMania weekend that, you know, while WWE had the NXT show at noon and then two nights of WrestleMania that, like, that same weekend in Dallas, that different shows were going on by Impact and NWA and others? No, it was fans enjoy wrestling, so why not make it available as much as possible and let the audience decide? I mean, folks, again, you know, you don't need a PhD in business to understand, like, this is free market capitalism. You know, let the free markets prevail and let the customer, us, the wrestling fans, gravitate to where we want to. I don't think it's the end of the world. And at the end of the day, from what we understand, Pat, looking at numbers, it's not like this hurt AEW. I mean, apparently it was their best buy rate since Double or Nothing. So, again, Tony made his money. And without a doubt, obviously, it created a lot of interest in what's going on, obviously, for the ensuing day. So let's get to the headlines here. And obviously, this week, a couple of interesting things. After the Castle show, a good Raw rating, even on Labor Day, where we know that normally Labor Day being the end of summer, theoretically, obviously, kids are going back to school the next day or that week of. Hey, Raw still get a solid 2.094, slightly down from the week before at 2.11. Obviously higher than it was 2 weeks ago, 2.01. Even before that, 1.978, 1.957, 2.23 on August 1st, and obviously the week right before Paul Levesque took over as head of creative was 1.9. So Raw, obviously, solid ratings.
Been trending upward.
Yeah, certainly after the Castle show.
It's been trending upward for a while.
There was a lot of intrigue about where, you know, this is going. Certainly the SmackDown rating continues to be solid, over 2 million, you know, high twos, you know, not just 2.0. 0.94, 2.1. I mean, we're talking about 2.2, 2.3. I think at one point, I think it was peaking at 2.4. Listen, the ratings speak for themselves. I think the fans are gravitating to Paul Levesque. Listen, bro, this is the mark in me. I like the booking. I've liked the presentation. I like the storylines. I like the United States, the coveted United States Heavyweight Championship being featured prominently on Raw. You know, we're seeing some guys and girls being featured that we haven't been seeing. And, you know, as someone that was getting a little tired of Vince with the presentation and good to see people like, you know, Dexter Lumis on and that very funny storyline that he has with The Miz going. The fact of, you know, featuring, obviously, the return of Braun Strowman, that was a big pop for the fans in the building. You know, again, Raw continues to impress. NXT's been doing well under the supervision of Shawn Michaels. Certainly, again, SmackDown continues to be great. On a side note, I'm a little disappointed about Pat McAfee not being on the broadcast team until the end of this college football season because, you know, I like Corey Graves on Monday. You know, having to endure Corey Graves twice in a week, not exactly my brand of vodka, Pat, but, you know, what do you think?
I mean, what are you really enduring? I thought you liked this guy. I don't understand. Fans are so fickle, man, I tell you.
What's that?
But they really are. I mean, but, like, what's the problem? Like, really? Like, what is the problem? It's not so bad. He's actually good at what he does.
I just think McAfee was, like, a different type of color guy. Again, different than Graves. I mean, I think, you know, Graves kind of goes out of his way to be that Bobby Heenan heel color guy on commentary. You know, McAfee's weird, man. McAfee is he'll mark out for Nakamura, then he'll mark out for Roman Reigns. He'll mark out for the next heel and then the next face. So it's kind of funny. I think Pat kind of keeps it a little spontaneous. You don't know where he leans. But your thoughts on the Raw ratings, man?
Well, they've been trending upward for a while. I think this is something that was going to happen regardless. Obviously, with, you know, with Triple H coming in, you know, it ended up getting better and getting there a lot sooner. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that, you know, he's creating a lot of interest right now. You know, he's getting a lot of fans to come back to see, hey, you know, is this actually going to be like what we think it is, or is it going to be something different now? You know what I'm saying? And that's really, I think, what's keeping fans still coming back, just the intrigue of it all. You know, obviously him bringing in a lot of his people from NXT, you know, kind of stamping, you know, himself, his mark, putting his mark on the brand. You know, you've been seeing it for a little bit here, and I think it's only going to, you know, trend further in that direction the more we go along. I mean, Raw is getting better and better. And again, like all the crazy ultra analytical fans who've never booked anything, you know, who don't know anything about the business, who don't get anything, who expect every show to be freaking WrestleMania, you know, they're going to complain and they're going to bitch, but they're still going to tune in. And I think, honestly, these last few months, they've got a lot of good stuff on TV. They really, really have. They've done a lot of fantastic matches. And again, it's only just going to get better and better as time goes along. But, you know, it's just really funny, like the dumb things that fans complain about, you know, like first names or you know, Drew not winning at the castle. You know, everybody's complaining about, oh, well, he should have won because they had his mom and his dad and his dog and his brother's sister's mustache was there and everybody was here and oh my God. And you know, it's not even his fucking country. He's Scottish, bro. He's close, but like, whatever, bro. He wrestled Roman Reigns in a main event in a fucking stadium. Okay. And guess what? If you're disappointed, you're supposed to be, disappointed because that's what keeps people coming back. Okay. That's what keeps people coming back. Nobody, you know, back in the day, did anybody complain that Roddy Piper would get away from Hogan and Hogan couldn't kick his ass? Did anybody complain about that? No. Hogan finally got his hands on him. Kicked his ass. You know what I'm saying?
Never beat him, though. But it made for something interesting. Never really beat him, though.
Absolutely.
Which I'm really, really happy about. Absolutely.
He beat him up. He beat him up, no doubt. Never beat him. Never pinned him, right? But he beat him up. And the crowd got the pop. But Piper always got his heat back. You know what I'm saying? And that little thing in itself I always thought was rather brilliant. That was always a rather brilliant piece of booking. Like, yeah, Hogan can kick my ass, but he can't beat me. You know what I mean? And that to me was always very, very interesting. But people didn't complain about that shit back then. People didn't complain that Vince would get over on Steve, you know, and cheat Steve out of things. No, you just kept fucking watching, and you enjoyed it. So stop trying to armchair book everything, people, and just enjoy it for what it is, because odds are it's going to go in a direction that you're going to end up liking.
Listen, Pat, again, you hit the nail on the head. Without a doubt, it's something that I think fans get fickle about. And, you know, it's one of those things, man, that it's almost like a predetermined outcome. You kind of, from just watching wrestling as long as we have, that whenever it's a momentous occasion, whether it's the hometown crowd rooting for the hometown guy, and I get it, you're right. It's not Scotland, it's Wales. But, you know, people in the UK are very, they're very regional, you know. It's like if it's someone from the UK, they tend to root for that person. I mean, it's interesting, right? Like, you know, whether you're from Ireland, Wales, Scotland, you know, it's kind of interesting. But as soon as you saw the Broken Dreams theme, the video package, I said, oh, you know, Drew's definitely losing today, some way, somehow. Unlike, you know, Daniel Garcia this past week on Dynamite in Buffalo winning the coveted Ring of Honor Pure Championship. So, you know, not the booking, you know, booking that some marks like, you know, oh, the hometown guy should win, the hometown girl should win. That's not always the case. I think, like you said, you know, they do it to get the reaction, to piss people off, because they'll keep watching. And that, I think, is really at the essence, at the core, really, I think, is what makes us as wrestling fans the really difficult demographic that we are. Interesting about the AEW ratings.
Yeah.
Sure.
Sorry, I just want to one little piece here. But, like, you know, Drew, for example, right? Like, Drew didn't get jobbed out in, like, 3 minutes and get beat up and then pretend to sell, like, an ankle injury or something like that that has, like, no documentation to back it up. No, he didn't do any of that, right? He went out there. He had a knockdown, drag-out fight with Roman, almost beat Roman, had it not been for the interference of Solo Sikoa, okay? You had the World Heavyweight Champion ringside. I mean, like, bro, all these things are pluses. And he lost, yeah, but he lost in a way where he's still strong. It's not his time now. I mean, is anybody going to complain when we get Drew against Karrion Kross? Are you going to complain? I'm not going to complain. They're going to beat the shit out of each other. It's going to be entertaining. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So, again, people, like, stop trying to take controls of the ride. Like, you know, don't assume the controls and take it for a nosedive. You know what I'm saying? Like, just
absolutely.
Just let it kind of close. Enjoy the ride and see where it goes, because I guarantee you when it's all said and done, you're not going to be disappointed. And if you are, then you're just a miserable bastard. I can't do anything for you.
That's right. Let's flip over to the AEW ratings this week. They cracked 1 million again, 1.035. Last 3 weeks, they've been over 1 million. Not, like, overwhelmingly over 1 million, but still, 1 million's 1 million, as they say. 1.020, 1.049. That's the last 3 weeks. The last time that they had reached 1 million was right after Forbidden Door on June 29th. They had been the high 900,000 since then. But, again, this is only the eighth time this year, Pat, that they've cracked 1 million. Again, we talked about on the last show in 2021, they cracked 1 million 12 times. Now, again, okay, they're kind of maybe ahead of schedule a little bit, but – you know, hey, 1.035, there was a lot of intrigue about after what happened at All Out. People were certainly wondering what's MJF going to do, what's he going to say, because we know that, hey, they have to start the show on Wednesday night with him. And sure enough, they didn't disappoint. They were in Buffalo. He came out in classic heel form with a Buffalo Bills jersey, you know, kind of pain, you know, singing the praises of Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills, which we all know was not – which was totally disingenuous, as we got to find out like 5 minutes in. But again, there was some intrigue there with what MJF was going to do. There was a lot of intrigue also because of, you know, and we'll talk about, I mean, that's our main event topic this week, but about what happened on Sunday during the media scrum. Obviously, no Kenny Omega, no Young Bucks, no CM Punk for different reasons. One was injured, supposedly, during the match. The other three were suspended. Well, actually, all four were suspended, theoretically, because of what happened, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But there was a lot of intrigue there. I think the Dynamite fell flat. I would not have brought out MJF that way. I would have brought him out from the beginning, just solid heel heat. I get it. Bringing in Moxley was necessary because of the shuffling of personnel. But I don't know, man. I love Moxley to death, and I think he's been carrying this company for the better part of the last half year, you know, with his work. His promo work is still what it is. I don't know. I just think it was a really flat Dynamite for what they needed it to be, and they needed a really hot Dynamite coming out of All Out after everything we learned in the last, let's say, 96 hours after All Out. It really fell flat for me. Yeah, a million is a million, but it's still a far cry from the 1.4 when they debuted in October 2019, Pat.
I mean, look, it was crazy because I remember talking to you, I believe, what, Labor Day? Labor Day,
yeah.
And then that Tuesday as well. And there was a lot of anticipation. There was a lot of hype, a lot of excitement for this episode of Dynamite last week. And obviously we found out what ended up happening, those suspensions and other stuff, which really threw us. But, I mean, it really didn't deliver. It really didn't deliver. They really didn't do anything new or intriguing or interesting. In other words, I felt personally, and maybe you might feel the same way, but I feel like they didn't do enough to bring me back for next week. You know what I mean? Because they had me. They had me right out of All Out. They had me with everything that happened and all that other stuff. You know, and again, press scrum aside, right? The return of MJF. Okay. Let's see what happens here. Let's see how interesting this is. You know, even though to me it was kind of done because now it's like, well, you had this potential to have a hot angle. Now it's a wrestling angle. Like they could have done a shoot thing. It could have been better. It could have been a little bit different. Who knows? Right. But now it's just, even though with that just being a wrestling angle, there's still enough for me to like come and tune in. And instead of, you know, starting out hot, doing something hot with MJF, you know, address the title picture, but like actually really address it. Don't act like it doesn't exist. And it's so funny because you get these AEW fans that criticize the WWE in the past for not acknowledging history or not acknowledging things that happened and this and that. Tony Khan did not acknowledge what happened at all, but that's okay. You know what I'm saying? Then he did this video where he read off a teleprompter instead of going out there and addressing the crowd. I mean, you know, people could talk all the shit that they want about Vince McMahon, but for the most part, when shit's happened, Vince is going out there and addressed the crowd. You know what I mean? The Bret Hart thing, that was different. You know what I'm saying? Because that was the beginning of an angle that was, you know, ended up taking over wrestling. But I mean, like, for the most part, when shit pops off, Vince will go out there and address people. He will. You know what I'm saying? And I thought that was a good opportunity for Tony Khan to go out there and address people, but he didn't. Personally, if I was Tony Khan, I would have tried to talk to these guys and keep them all there and keep them there and forget about the undercards bitching and moaning and belly aching about what people can or can't get away. To some extent, that's Tony Khan's fault if something like that does happen, because Tony Khan should have put his foot down a long time ago and should have set the standards and the boundaries of what can go on and what can't go on in the company. Obviously, those guys, they're main eventers, they're important to the company. Some of them are office. I get that. But, like, he should have figured out a way to make it work, man, because I really don't think that he's going to capture something like this again. I don't think that something like this is ever going to happen again. You know what I mean? And even if it is a work, they still didn't capitalize off of it that night. So, you know, now they're going into next week. They're building towards Grand Slam. Okay, that's fine. But, like, I'm not terribly intrigued. I'm just not. Like the desire to want to watch is not there. And I think that that's going to translate to a lot of casuals. I think that's going to translate to a lot of people. And I think, ultimately, I don't think they're going to be able to sustain that million. I really don't. I think between now, Grand Slam will probably get a million. But between now and their pay-per-view, I think they might get it maybe one, maybe twice if they're lucky, maybe twice. But I don't think that they're going to get consistent million ratings. They're just not, because they didn't do anything compelling or interesting to swing some of those people that are now pro Triple H to their side.
No, you're absolutely right. And to your point about Grand Slam coming up on September, I believe, if I'm just looking at the calendar correctly, coming up on September the 21st, the Arthur Ashe Center, Great facility. I mean, obviously, they did well last year. I think it seems like Tony Khan wants to make this a staple event every fall. But I'm with you, man. Like, I didn't like Tony reading from a teleprompter. And again, I'm not saying I'm the best public speaker in the world, but if you're going to go out and make an announcement of this magnitude, because obviously after what happened with the media scrum and what happened with CM Punk during the match, and obviously we're reading reports about an injury, obviously the AEW championship has been vacated once again. The Trios tag titles were also vacated, which, you know, again, at least it was those titles were, you know, filled on this past Dynamite, obviously not in an interim basis. I think it's kind of interesting though, because right, like there are some things about like what's interim and what isn't, because this wasn't an interim Trios tag team title match on Wednesday. Like this was like essentially whoever wins Wednesday in this Trios, you know, matchup, those are the Trios tag champions. There's no interim label, which is interesting about it. But Khan coming out and sort of, and I get it, people love tournaments and we love brackets, right? You know, we live for March Madness. We live for the Champions League as football fans. I mean, I get all that, but this was just not a compelling bracket, bro. I mean, again, and you know, Khan's calling it the Tournament of Champions, right? Because it's, oh, well, he's trying to get all the viable, relevant champions in AEW's short history. So, again, we had a first-round matchup. We had Hangman Page against Bryan Danielson, right? And it was interesting about the captions in every person, right? Hangman, the former AEW champion, former tag team champion, against Danielson, who's a six-time world champion. In the other bracket, Sammy Guevara, the three-time TNT champion, against Darby Allin, the longest reigning TNT champion. Obviously, the winner of Hangman and Danielson would face Jericho, who got a bye. And the winner of Sammy Guevara versus Darby Allin would face Jon Moxley, who also has a bye because he's a, you know, three-time world champion. And, of course, the finals take place at Grand Slam. I don't know, man. I just think this is very, very anticlimactic because you can just kind of smell that MJF is going to wait until the end of the tournament. Whoever wins that tournament at Grand Slam is going to be exhausted. It almost seems like all those cash-ins that over the years at Money in the Bank where the champion is exhausted or beat up, and here comes so-and-so, cashes in, boom, wins the championship. I don't know, man. It just seems very anticlimactic because it's almost certain that MJF is going to wait until Grand Slam. It's in Queens, you know, right near Long Island, so there's going to be a little bit of a hometown feel for him, I would say. I don't know, man. I just don't like this. I don't like this tournament. We just went through a tournament recently. I don't know. I just think it's overkill at this point.
I mean, look, you know, I think a lot of this could have been spared had he done a better job of building other main event stars at the beginning of the company, or even more so, like, as these talents are acquired, right? Like, Bryan Danielson should be a lot bigger than what he is right now. And I'll tell you right now, if that's not the guy that they're going to put the title on, then I don't know what they're going to do. Because, yeah, okay, Moxley, you get it. Okay, Moxley is good worker, good guy, you know, like good champion, if you will, right? But been there, done that. You know, Jericho, been there, done that. You know, Danielson to me is the one that sticks out, you know, especially because of his talent and just everything that he could do. And I feel like he's a lot more versatile as a performer than Moxley is right now or Jericho is right now. Jericho's in no condition to be holding a world title. And if he holds the world title, bro, that's going to be the biggest shit show ever because Jericho could barely work, man. Why are you going to put the championship on this guy? Danielson to me is perfect because not only is he a great wrestler and he could do everything that a main eventer needs to do, but he can be a really great organic babyface, and he would be the perfect babyface to MJF's heel. And I think that those two would be able to work together and do good business and create interesting stories because they're both very good workers. So if I had to pick, that's what I would pick. But again, He should have been champion a long time ago. He should have been champion when he debuted. He should have come in and beat Kenny for the title. They should have given it to Hangman. I get that Khan made a promise, but it didn't branch out. And even then with Hangman, it's not so much Hangman's fault as Tony Khan's fault for not presenting him the way that he could have and should have as a superstar, as somebody who is bigger than just a wrestler. And this is where they lack in a lot of regards because they're, well, you know, they don't want to do what WWE does, but dude, that helps you out. That makes you a bigger star. It makes you a bigger star. I mean, WCW did it with Sting.
No, Pat, listen, you're absolutely – I'm sorry to cut you off. I'll let you finish, though, but you're absolutely right.
No, no worries.
Why not maximize the fact that Bryan Danielson is a global name? This is a guy who headlined WrestleMania 30, arguably one of the best WrestleMania – never mind the card. The card was amazing, I think. But just the the payoff of a nine-month storyline of the underdog finally overcoming the authority, overcoming the adversity – like, this is a name that, again, has a lot of clout pop culture-wise. There are people, you know, saying, you know, yes, 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 because of Bryan Danielson, going back to 2014 and 2015. And it's amazing. And I'm with you. Khan dropped the ball on this. And if the finals are whoever, Danielson, maybe Moxley, who knows? Maybe it's Danielson and Moxley. You know, again, I don't want to see Chris Jericho and MJF feud. We saw that for literally 16 months in 2020 into 2020. We don't need that again. We don't need two heels going at each other. I think it's fine. But Danielson and MJF would be great. My concern is just the fact that, you know, listen, this week, obviously, and part of the news cycle here we're talking about today, obviously, is AEW announcing that full laundry load, heavy artillery, I think that's the guy from Impact, Josh Alexander, the World Heavyweight Champion. Oh, Full Gear, excuse me. So Full Gear is coming to the Prudential Center, you know, a big mark area. We know Prudential Center for the most part will probably be kind of filled, you know, coming up in November. But if this is what you're setting up for in Grand Slam, you're setting up a feud essentially of like MJF against maybe Danielson, you know, it's gotta be hot, man. And again, if you want to fill up that building in Newark coming up in November, it has to be more compelling here, at, you know, going into Grand Slam and then after Grand Slam. Because again, you know, this is something that you would think Khan sees a potential payday. Again, there's no CM Punk. The buy rates may not be as good as what he's had the last couple of pay-per-views, right, with Punk headlining. I don't know, man. I just think I got a bad feeling this could potentially fall flat again for Khan, especially in a market where you know there are a lot of marks.
I mean, look, they're going to show up. They're going to do what they're going to do. They're going to still sell cheap tickets the day of. People will go just because, you know what I'm saying? Obviously, the people that are going to pay top dollar to, you know, to go and see this stuff, we'll pay top dollar to go and see this stuff, but you're probably going to end up selling out with a lot of people a day of for cheap seats. And that's fine. That's okay. You got people there at the top, the place, it'll be big. But again, bro, like, he shouldn't be at this point right now, man. He should be so far ahead with this. Danielson should be so much bigger than what he is in that company. He should almost still have his same status that he had in WWE, you know? And not only him, but it should be other guys. Jungle Boy should be up there now. You know, Sammy should be a little bit bigger than what he is now. You know, a lot of these people, you know, and again, I think a lot of it just comes down to Tony Khan, the creative, and their inability to be able to produce these guys to be bigger than what they are, bigger, larger than life personalities. And again, a lot of people are like, well, it's pro wrestling. No, man. You're still selling characters, dude. You're still selling people as characters. And you still want people to be invested in these characters, you know? So, yeah, I'm with you. I'm not terribly excited for it. I mean, again, that's if they decide to go that route. You know what I mean? We don't know yet. Could they? Maybe. They might change. We don't know yet. But let's kind of see what happens and take it from there. But I got to be honest, man, they've just really botched it with the momentum. I don't feel like they have really any momentum going their way now. You know what I mean? And I think it would have just been better for them to kind of figure something out and say, hey, you know what? I don't give a fuck if you guys don't like each other. We need to make money, and we need to do what we got to do. And if you guys don't want to do it, then fuck off. I'll release you. I'm pretty sure that's not what the case was. You know what I'm saying?
No.
I'm pretty sure Tony Khan did what he had to do to preserve his locker room.
No, listen, you're absolutely right on that. And I think that, obviously, after what happened at All Out during the media scrum, and certainly going into Dynamite, yeah, there was some intrigue. I mean, it's going to be hard, like you said, bro, to keep fans kind of compelled to want to watch next week. Again, we're seeing where this tournament is going. You know, Tony's got to do a better job here. You know, there's a lot of momentum and heat here that you can build off of coming off of All Out and what happened. And certainly, you know, one of the biggest things to come out of All Out and certainly the media scrum is, now again, different reports this week, I'm not sure how viable they are, but apparently the Young Bucks have sent some feelers out to WWE. That was being reported in a couple other spots, Wrestle Inc., Pro Wrestling, I think RingInsider.com, a couple other sites as well. I got to tell you, man, and again, and we'll get to why that's so significant in a minute in our main event topic, but I don't know, man. It just seems like this isn't a tag team that I can't see Paul. Again, listen, if it makes money, it'll make money. Paul Levesque's about making money. The business model is there for WWE. I just don't see where the Young Bucks fit in with what WWE does from a presentation perspective. And it almost seems like if Paul Levesque were to sign the Young Bucks, or let's say, I don't know, the Young Bucks are able to accomplish, let's say, what Malakai Black just did and get out of his contract, or attempted to get out of his contract and want his release. I just think this is a team that Paul Levesque is going to have to really fine-tune. I think the Young Bucks might have to live in NXT for a little bit, dude. They're just, I don't know, man. I get it. They're an accomplished tag team. They've been in the business almost seems forever. I don't think they're the Young Bucks anymore. I think they're probably like mid-40s bucks, in my opinion. But I just
maybe
don't
their bodies.
See them as, maybe. I just don't see them as a team that Paul Levesque would want to feature prominently. They're just better tag teams presentation-wise and worker rate-wise in WWE right now where, hey, listen, maybe it's a name that Paul would like to get. Trust me. I mean, listen, whatever helps for ratings and marketing and everything else, it'd be great. I just don't see a team like Matt and Nick Jackson being on Paul Levesque's radar. Maybe I'm wrong. Who knows?
I think you're wrong. I think that those guys, the stuff that they do, the kind of gimmick character persona that they kind of portray, I think those guys would be perfect in the E. And I think that the Triple H would maximize whatever he can do with them. And look, let's be real. They can have a ton of great matches with a lot of people there. Obviously, big dream matches, them and the Usos, you know? So, I mean, that could be something that could be really interesting. You know, and I think even for their differences, I'm sure that they still have a pretty good relationship with Cody. You know, Kenny, it seemed like, was the one that didn't really get along with Cody at the end from what we read. But then again, you got to take that with a grain of salt. I think they'd be awesome over there, honestly. I really do. And more importantly, I think that they would be able to take themselves to a different level. And I think that they would be able to kind of give themselves a finishing school that they never really got, you know? So for me, I see that as nothing but a win. You know, the crowd will be into it. And even people who haven't seen these guys work, they're going to be like, man, these guys, they're impressive. Like, they're good flyers. And they're entertaining. And I think within the WWE structure, within the WWE confines, they do great. I mean, look, prime example, look at the work that they did in New Japan. The stuff they did in New Japan was great. Whether it was as junior heavyweight tag team champions or tag team champions, they worked great with everybody, you know, but they had the structure there. They had Jado as their booker saying, hey, can't do that shit. Let's keep it like this. You know,
well,
a little bit of this bullshit, but let's keep it serious.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think also, too, let's be fair. I mean, I think Paul Levesque and the WWE, you know, apparatus and echo chamber would help him probably clean up a lot of the not the sloppy stuff, but it just seems like, again, not to quote the great James E. Cornette, but it just seems like the Bucks are kind of complacent, just kind of doing spot fest or comedy stuff. And I think Paul could really get the most out of them more than Tony Khan ever could. I just think that, you know, when you allow current talent to have corporate positions like they do as EVPs, I think it lends itself to a very complacent climate. And I think that's, again, I'm not a worker. I mean, you're the worker here, bro. But it just seems like Paul, I think, could be able to kind of maybe clean it up a little bit, you know, kind of like when you haven't had a haircut in a while, you go to the barber and you're like, hey, listen, do me a favor. Clean this up over here, you know, get the back of my neck, you know, get the side. You know, I think Paul and the performance and I think the staff personnel would find a way to kind of like, okay, we get it. These guys are professionals, but they could clean up a lot of what I think Matt and Nick Jackson kind of just do egregiously, bro.
Yeah, of course. I mean, again, you know, it's when you leave people to their own devices, especially workers, they're going to go and they're going to do whatever the hell they want, whether it's good, bad, or ugly. You know, I just think that as far as it goes with, you know, as far as it goes with the Young Bucks and stuff like that, Triple H, that whole system, they'll bring them back in and they'll reel them in whenever they go a little too far. But I think they'll also say, hey, we got some really talented guys here and we got guys that have a following, you know, and we can take them to the next level. And I think that's the most important thing, you know, seeing the potential in it and taking them to the next level. And look, even though they've been AEW EVPs, even though they've been, you know, wrestling in AEW, they've wrestled in New Japan, they've wrestled all over the Indies, Impact, everywhere, they still haven't gone to the E. And, you know, if you're a wrestler growing up in America, it doesn't matter what the situation is. At some point in time, you're going to want to take a look. You're going to want to see. And if you have the chance to go, take it. You know what I'm saying? Because, I mean, look, their style obviously has weighed a lot on their bodies. Matt specifically, his back is messed up pretty bad. You can't fly around like that forever. And if you can, or if you could still do some of it, why not do it in the biggest company in the world? Why not do it where more people are going to see you? Why not take your game to the next level? That's all I'm saying.
I'm with you, bro. I'm with you. And I think it'll be interesting, again, whether or not these reports are accurate or not. Remains to be seen. But the reason that these reports are circulating, Pat, again, and as we move on to our main event topic this week, is certainly the media scrum.
Sure. We didn't talk about Bobby Fish.
Okay, yes, that's right, yes. Looking here at my notes here, Bobby Fish, again, whose contract was not renewed by Tony Khan, apparently, on a recent podcast, was very, very frank and very, very candid about the backstage climate in AEW, a recent match he had with CM Punk, even some heat with Dax Harwood in the back. I think it really lends itself to really highlight, man, the what I would argue the dysfunctional climate in AEW.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, Bobby Fish is a pro, okay? Bobby Fish is a dude who's been around for quite some time. I think that Bobby Fish is the kind of guy that, you know, he's going to be respectful of everybody regardless of whatever. But if you're going to disrespect him, or you're going to think that you're going to big time him, or you're going to think you're going to do something like that, he's going to let you know and he's going to say something about it. You know, he talked about working with CM Punk. He mentioned how CM Punk's not a martial artist. I think anybody with a good set of working eyes or corrective lenses or anything else they can see will tell you that CM Punk is not a martial artist. He's a pro wrestler. I think also a guy like Bobby Fish, who's very much rooted in the traditions of wrestling, is not going to accept or like CM Punk acting the way he does backstage. He's just not going to take that shit because he's going to say, well, fuck this guy. Who the fuck are you? You know what I mean? He went out there. He did what he had to do. He had a little heat with Punk. He's obviously called out Punk a couple of times. Dax Harwood, you know, another guy that he had heat with, but he noted the difference that with Punk, he can't go out there and do business with him. You know, he did do it. They asked him to do it. He did it. He did what he had to do. I know a lot of the marks, you know, turning on Bobby Fish, which is really funny because all y'all marked out for these guys, loved these guys a couple years back, but now all of a sudden, you know, dude's a jabroni and I see people kind of writing about this stuff and it's like, okay, whatever. But you know, even with Dax Harwood, you know, they can still put their differences aside and work well together. You know, I mean, look, I've been pretty critical of FDR. I don't think they're original. They're good workers. They're solid in the ring. They have no character. Their character, I don't know, like, what are they? The Heart Busters or the Brain Foundation? I don't know what they are now. But, you know, Red Dragon, Kyle O'Reilly, Bobby Fish, very accomplished tag team, very experienced tag team. In my opinion, the better tag team between them and FTR. But all four guys, not really, you know, bursting at the seams of personality. You know what I mean? So I think that's something that maybe that all these guys kind of lack. Obviously, FTR is going to ride the wave that they're riding now. At some point in time, I would like to see them back in the E just to see how they've changed or how they'll adapt. But it sounds like there's a lot of egos running wild in the AEW locker room. And I think that there's people back there that probably either don't talk about it or deal with it internally. But really, really eye-opening, some of the statements on behalf of Bobby Fish, a.k.a. Roberto Pescalo.
Yeah, no, listen, you're absolutely right. And I think it really lends itself to this perspective that, hey, you know, CM Punk has kind of garnered this reputation for some time about being difficult and being at times insufferable to work with. And Bobby Fish, I think, reiterated that in during that interview. Now, remains to be seen what happens. I would not doubt for a second if Bobby Fish doesn't resurface in NXT. He's a great worker. Again, not the best personality, not great on the mic, but an amazing worker, solid professional. Be great to maybe kind of see him tag up again with Roderick Strong, who, you know, listen, not been the biggest fan of his work with the Diamond Mine. I get it. It's been kind of a semi-compelling storyline, but I don't know, maybe getting Bobby Fish back in there kind of is a shot in the arm for Roderick Strong, who I think is still a good worker. Remains to be seen, but certainly I think it was very eye-opening to hear Fish's comments, because it's what a lot of, not fans, but some insiders would say is, what is the problem with Phil Brooks? This I don't know, notion of either being sanctimonious and self-righteous. I think that's what Punk has come across. And when, you know, a guy like Bobby Fish, let's be honest, Bobby Fish could stretch out Phil Brooks in, I don't know, less than 30 seconds in a real fight, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with Dax Harwood. And I love Dax Harwood, and I love Cash Wheeler. They're one of my favorite teams. But we got to be real about the worker and sort of, I mean, I hate to use this word, the lethal weapon that is Bobby Fish. I mean, this is a guy who can, you know, really work you over if he needs to. So very interesting, obviously, this week with Bobby Fish's comments. Pat, you know, obviously, again, that helps us transition into our main event topic here. We've been reading for days now. Every podcast has opined. We don't really know what to believe anymore. Obviously, after the media scrum on Sunday night, CM Punk pretty much took it as an opportunity just to vent his frustrations about the perception of him when it comes to him and Colt Cabana, obviously in a room full of, I think it was 7 journalists. It wasn't like, this isn't like the NFL where there's like 35, 40, maybe 50 journalists in a press conference. But it seems like Punk, with Tony Khan next to him, was very upset about how he's being portrayed concerning Colt Cabana. Because apparently Colt Cabana is a guy that was very well liked in the locker room by people like the Young Bucks, by Kenny, by others, which again, prompted Tony Khan to re-sign him to the ROH brand because he was not having his contract renewed with AEW. Phil Brooks took exception with apparently the perception of him and what it had to do with Colt Cabana. He called out the EVPs, quote, these are EVPs that couldn't even run a target, which I thought was kind of a funny line there, you know, referencing Kenny Omega and Matt and Mick Jackson collectively. We've read about what happened after Punk left the podium. He went into his locker room. It seemed like a brawl broke out between him, his trainer, Ace Steel. Apparently, Larry, his dog, was in the vicinity. Ace Steel's wife was in there. Let's try to separate facts from fiction here, because ultimately, man, like, the big question we have here this week is, are we being worked here? Like, is this a work or is this real about what's going on with Matt and Nick Jackson, with Kenny Omega, CM Punk? I mean, they've been suspended. I mean, listen, no one's ever going to call this the ongoing work that is Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart after all these years. But, you know, I don't know. I think this could have been a great storyline. It's already fizzled for me.
I'm with you, man. I've been of the belief that this entire thing's going to work, and I felt like this is the way that they were going to turn Punk. I think maybe he was going to shoot some kind of an angle there. Again, let's kind of see where it goes. Crazy that Punk got hurt yet again. I mean, wow, dude. Like, you know, and here's the interesting thing. You mentioned Bret and Shawn, right? You know, Bret and Shawn were both very good workers, right? Very, very good workers. Punk on his best day couldn't even lace either one of their boots, bro. I'm sorry. And especially not now, dude. this guy has not been a good performer at all. And I know that a lot of his fans are going to say, well, you know, you got to understand that, you know, his Mercury was in retrograde and blah, blah. Like, I don't care. Dude, you're coming back. You knew you were going to come back. Why didn't you put in the time to just be better in the ring? Why? Why? You can tell that he hasn't, okay? Here's something interesting to think about, okay? Dwayne Johnson, right, The Rock, comes back in what? When did he come back originally? 2012, I want to say? Yeah, he came back in 2012 the first time,
it
right,
was like
to take on Cena.
It was really the spring of 2011 going into 2012, leading up to the match with John Cena. Then he had a break.
Right.
And then if you remember, he came back in January 2013 to challenge CM Punk, coincidentally, for the WWE title and, you know, headlined WrestleMania that year.
Okay. So this is a guy who's got the world by the balls in Dwayne Johnson, right? He can do anything he wants, making movies, top star in the business, arguably the greatest stalker of all time. In my opinion, the greatest stalker of all time behind Roddy Piper. You know, Roddy Piper to me is just still the man. He put in the time. He looked at himself. He had the awareness to say, gee, you know what? Even when I was really good at this, I still wasn't the best at it. It would probably do me some good to go hit a ring and to get some time in and to make sure that I'm good to go when the time comes for me to perform, because I don't want to look like a jabroni out there. You know what I'm saying? So what did he do? He got the E to send him a ring. They sent them a ring. They sent them Curtis Axel, you know, Joe Hennig. And he worked out with them. And he helped them out. And he got him to the point where he was good enough to be able to work that match with John Cena at WrestleMania 28. Now, the match in 2013, a little bit different. But you could see that going into 2011 or the spring of 2011 and then leading into 2012, he was really focused, because that match with Cena was actually pretty damn good, the one at WrestleMania 28, and I was there to witness that. And, you know, Rocky had that awareness that even though he is such a huge name, he can coast on that alone, he still wanted to be a better performer in the ring when he came back. To me, it seems like Punk didn't do that. To me, it seems like Punk believed, I'm the best in the world, and just went out there and just worked and did whatever. And that's really the best way of describing his work in AEW thus far, whatever. You know what I mean? It's obviously nowhere near the levels of the stuff that he did in ROH. It's nowhere near the level of stuff that he did in the WWE. And it's been very underwhelming. And honestly, I just feel like it's really been mishandled. The whole thing's been mishandled. Now, could some of that be attributed to the fact that maybe Tony Khan gave him too much control? Possibly. As we all know, too much creative control in wrestling does tend to create problems. But I haven't been into it. This has completely turned me off altogether. The fact that this guy continues to get hurt. I mean, again, you know, you're comparing it to Bret and Shawn. Bret and Shawn could carry that. Those guys weren't brittle. They weren't going to get hurt. Even if he stuck around, and even if they, let's say, wanted to hot shot that angle with the Bucks, or, you know, take that heat and turn it into something, it wasn't going to last. Because Punk's not durable anymore, man. He's just not there. So I don't know, man. Could it be a work? Yeah, could be. You know, maybe Shikatsu real. You know what I mean? And maybe he did really get hurt, you know? Supposedly they say he got – I mean, there's a lot of conflicting reports again. But supposedly he got hurt when he hit the tope to Moxley on the outside of the ring, right? Now, I watched the match back. He didn't really seem to hurt himself there. Maybe that's just what they're selling to the fans. Maybe, you know, they want to say that instead of, hey, he tried to punch one of the Young Bucks and he tore his tricep. Not a good look, you know, especially for a world champion. You know what I mean? Not a good look. Well, here's my other thing, too, because I read reports that the Young Bucks went and kicked down his door after he told people, hey, if you got a fucking problem with me, come find me. Come talk to me. Well, they went and they found him. My question is when the Young Bucks kicked that door, did they slap their leg? Because that's something that I'm going to wonder about now. Did they slap their leg when they kicked the door open or tried to? Who knows? You know?
No, Pat, that's right. And I think that also, too, I mean, obviously reports are conflicting that he tore his pectoral muscle. We're looking at somewhere between 6 to 8 months of recovery time. Again, bro, this is the worst possible timing for Tony Khan, because despite the fact that he's been sloppy, the fact that he has not, it's not been the best presentation for literally a full calendar year, you know, not having Punk on television is going to hurt their rating. I mean, again, I don't think it's compelling what he's been doing at all, but that audience seems to love him, and I think that's what helps draw the rating. I think also, too, if this is legit and there's legitimate heat between Kenny Omega, Matt and Nick Jackson, and CM Punk, maybe being away 8 months might help diffuse this. Again, the problem is that he got hurt. And, you know, as you mentioned, he's brittle. He's not very dependable. Clearly has been shown not to be durable. And now, again, you know, CM Punk has to be out of action for 8 months. Not to say that fans, that audience won't be clamoring for him to come back. But let's be real. Right now we're looking at September. You know, let's just say for the sake of argument, he's, you know, getting surgery tomorrow, for example. Well, all right. Well, then theoretically, a timeline, he wouldn't be back until sometime in maybe Double or Nothing by next, you know, May. And again, if the show continues to be in Las Vegas, then obviously that is something that would be a good build-up for. But this is where Tony Khan's going to have to really put his big boy pants, as they say, roll up his sleeves and really get creative and maybe get some feedback from people, because pretty much it's going to be dependent on Danielson, MJF, Moxley, that core of people. And again, we don't know what's going to happen with the Bucks and Omega. Yeah, it's being reported that they got suspended. We don't know if Tony Khan's going to remove their EVP titles. I mean, everyone and their mothers opined this week on podcasts, whether it's Bischoff, whether it's Conrad Thompson, whether it's, Disco Inferno and Conan, Jim Cornette. Everyone seems to have their take on what this means. And I think there's been this consensus that if Matt and Nick Jackson and Kenny Omega continue to be not just workers but also part of the office and corporate, I just think, bro, again, and I'm not an attorney, our good friend and a big fan of the show, Jimmy Baracato, shout out to him, we love him. Who tunes in could probably give us a better legal answer to this. But I just think that is ripe for a legal disaster. I think you're leaving yourself open to liability, to unsafe work environments, the hostile work environment. I mean, these are legal things. This is not something you poo-poo and you just, you know, dismiss altogether. I mean, again, this is what could be catastrophic for a company that is, on the brink of not going extinct, but maybe not drawing ratings, maybe not drawing house. I don't know, man. Just a lot to unpackage there, bro. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I don't think that this really bodes well for them in terms of legitimizing themselves, you know, as a quote-unquote competitor or even just putting them slightly below that category, you know? Like, I don't know, man. At this point, I kind of just... I really respect Impact a lot more than I do AEW, because Impact at least is still very professional. And again, just the way that they present their talent, the things that they do, they just do it a lot better. I mean, again, I know there's going to be AEW fans that are going to be very fucking salty about this, very much in their feelings. And again, feel free to vocalize that. Feel free to tell us about it. But yeah, I don't know, man. I'm like I said, I kind of just lost interest in it. I'm not really buying it. I'm not really digging it, and I kind of just feel like, I don't know. It's very, very flat thus far. It's very, very flat thus far. Speaking of people, speaking of people and questions and submitting things, we do actually have some questions here that came from our Working the March Instagram. I had basically put up a poll in our stories, and we're going to be doing that regularly now. Probably every Friday, we're going to be putting up the questions there. So we have a few questions that we have
good
here.
Good stuff.
All right. So question number one comes from Instagram user Patty Regan. It says, why is Patrick so handsome? He was just born that way. But thank you, Patty Regan, for listening to the show. You're a really swell guy. We also have another question here from Instagram user Flat Alexander. I believe it's Alexander Flat. Thank you for listening to the show, Alexander. We really appreciate the support. Is he a friend of yours?
I went to high school with Alex Flat. Yes, I went to high school with him and his brother at Good Memorial High School in West New York, still one of the better urban high schools in the state of New Jersey. So go Tigers. I've known him since childhood.
Since the 70s, right? Like you guys have known each other?
Well, not since the 70s. I'm still looking pretty good for my age there, sir. Thank you.
So Alexander Platt asks, when do you think we will see Rollins versus Reigns or Rock versus Reigns? Great show, by the way. Thank you, Alexander. We really appreciate that. Professor, do you want to take this one?
Well, it seems like Rock and Reigns is theoretically going to be the main event for WrestleMania Night 2 next year in Los Angeles, Inglewood, California at SoFi Stadium. It seems that, you know, there's a compelling storyline there because of they are related. They are cousins. Samoans, it just seems like there's multiple cousins. Jesus Christ. They breed like rabbits over there, I think, in that community. But, you know, that would arguably be, I think, the last stepping stone for Reigns as far as accelerating his greatness, right? I mean, he's beaten Cena clean. He's beaten Lesnar. I mean, maybe not the cleanest way, but he's gone over on big names, on Edge, on Bryan Danielson. He's gone over on other guys throughout this entire run that he's had of over two full calendar years of being Universal Champion, now being the undisputed WWE Universal dual title holder. And it just seems that, you know, that's what they're hopefully moving towards in April. Again, I don't want to see a repeat, Pat, of what we saw in 2013. In 2012, you know, you were there in Miami for WrestleMania 28. Great match for them. The build up, the storytelling for a full year before their match in Miami was amazing. Really deflating in 2013 here at MetLife. I mean, you could tell that Dwayne Johnson was struggling. He was just like maybe not the best cardio work before. And again, listen, he had been doing movies. He became a full time movie star, right? The Fast and Furious franchise. He took off with that, right? In 2011, yes, and. Okay, it wasn't his best match. I mean, that's my lasting recollection of Rocky. I don't want to see that next year in SoFi. I think if this is to ultimately put Reigns on perhaps the Mount Rushmore of WWE, you know, you want a good match. And I think even Rocky, because it's his cousin, I think Dwayne's going to go out of his way to make sure that he's in good shape, that he works, that he spars, that he gets the training, you know, that he needs for this match, because I think this could ultimately be one of the biggest main events in the company's history. As for Rollins, if everyone remembers earlier this year at the Royal Rumble, a really, really great match. You know, all the members of the Shield, every time they face each other, have great matches. They're all good workers. I would argue Rollins is the best worker of the three, I would say. And I think it'd be compelling. Now, I don't know where it fits right now, because it seems like Rollins and Matt Riddle are a really compelling storyline. I think they could continue feuding for months. Maybe at some point, if Randy Orton doesn't come back anytime soon, maybe you got to stick Rollins in the title picture for a little bit between now and Survivor Series or the end of the year. Apparently, I think there's no pay-per-view in December this year. There's no TLC like it has been in the past. So between now and the end of the year, maybe Rollins has to fill that gap.
Yeah, I agree. I think sooner or later we're going to get that matchup. I mean, that's too big of a matchup with two ultra-talented guys. You obviously have the history going back, you know, in Shield and stuff like that. So that would just make a ton of sense to me. And Roman and Rocky, we're definitely going to end up getting that at WrestleMania. So I'm pretty darn excited about that, if I say so myself. We also have one final question here from Instagram user Testify57. A good friend of mine named Mr. John Stain from out in Sea Caucus, New Jersey, out there in the weeds in Sea Caucus. And John asks a fairly simple question, in my opinion. Is CM Punk a jive turkey or not? I'm going to say he's a jive turkey. I'm going to go with jive turkey on this one. What about you?
I would argue, I think that's a very kind characterization of Phil Brooks. I think he's, I think he's become a full blown Jabron or Jabroni, whatever term you want to use, man. I think it's, you have to be intellectually honest here in this conversation. And for everyone tuning in at home on wherever you're tuning in on your PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet at blogtalkradio.com/workingthemarks. You got to be honest with yourselves, folks. This has been a deflating run for CM Punk, and it has hurt his legacy as a pro wrestler. I mean, you know, he left WWE under his own fruition, right? A lot of people applauded him for it. He became almost a martyr in the eyes of the marks across the country. But I'll tell you something. He has hurt his legacy. It's almost like a guy has been away from a sport for so many years. There's this intrigue for him to come back. And when he comes back, he just doesn't perform, and he's flat. And that's what's happened to Phil Brooks. And I think this ultimately has really hurt his legacy as a pro wrestler. It really, really has. And any mark that disagrees, then I don't know what you're watching, because the presentation hasn't been there. Their in-ring work has been beyond sloppy. Never mind the funny pages like Botch Club on Instagram or Botchamania. Folks, you got to be honest with yourselves. If there's a guy that has really, really mailed it in. Again, I grade for a living, and part of my job description is to grade people on their performances and on their work. I hate to break it to you, folks. In the calendar year that CM Punk has been back, he gets a grade of an F. This is a guy who at one point was drawing the same merch sales as John Cena in 2011 into 2012, maybe even 2013, maybe. Who knows? He's gone from an A player to an F in less than a decade. I think that is something he's never going to recover from. I'm sorry. This is something you don't recover from, and Phil Brooks isn't going to.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I don't think that there's any turning back. Obviously, he's going to have his built-in audience, and that's fine. That's great that he has that, but I just don't see it getting any better. I felt like, you know, him coming off this injury and coming back, you know, the supposed pulverized foot, I thought that, you know, this would be a really, really good chance for him to come back, be different, be better than what he was before. To me, it seems like it didn't improve at all. And it's really alarming. I think that there's a lot of fans that kind of have those Jim Cornette, Brian Lass, rose-colored glasses when it comes to him and can't really see what it is and can't be objective about it in any regard. But, yeah, I'm just I don't see any way up for him in this. I really, really don't. But time will tell on that one.
I'm with you, man. I'm with you. Great questions, folks. Again, write to the show. Keep writing to us. workingthemarks@gmail.com. Again, check out the Instagram, always at working_the_marks. I know Pat does a great job with stories and questions. Keep them coming, folks. Again, and a shout out to D Rotten for all the great technical work that he does on this program. Again, we wouldn't be able to do anything we do on this show without D. Rotten. So a shout out to him. Pat, before we close it out this week here, on this day in wrestling history, but again, just on this day, I mean, as we record today on September the 11th, certainly 21 years ago, a day that really rocked our country. And for a lot of, you know, for thousands of Americans and their families, we've never recovered the same. You know, I remember the days after 9/11 in 2001. I believe that Thursday, WWF at the time, Vince McMahon brought the entire roster out to the ramp. Yeah, Lillian Garcia sing the national anthem. I mean, again, you know, you don't ever want another 9/11, but on the morning of 9/12, that sense of unity and pride as Americans was amazing. I mean, folks, if you go back on YouTube and you watch that intro and you watch Lillian Garcia's emotion into the national anthem, I mean, if that doesn't get you misty, then I'm sorry. You don't have a soul, folks, because that should move you. It's been 21 years. It feels like yesterday. Again, because of where we live, Pat, you know, we can just walk a couple blocks and we can look at the skyline every day. It's not the same skyline for me growing up as it was for so many of us in our age demographic, you know, in our late 30s, in our 40s now, late 40s. It was a sad time though for us, you know. But again, people hashtag never forget. Well, it seems like a lot of people have forgotten, and I'm not trying to get sanctimonious or self-righteous here, but you know, let's kind of be you know, let's have it prominent in our minds about why that day is important, and you know, certainly the impact it's left on us, you know, especially the wrestling community too.
I'll argue that some people, I think, don't want to remember because it is quite painful, and I think that they remember perhaps in their own way. For me personally, you know, I've never watched anything about it since then. I didn't watch that World Trade Center movie. I had no desire to watch any of that stuff. I don't want to relive any of that. That was a day that a lot of things really changed, I think, for all of us. And the world that we grew up in was completely different after that. It was absolutely horrifying. It was tragic. I don't need to really recant any of it. You know, there's tons of stuff out there for those of you who are listening that didn't experience that, but certainly something that we never want to feel again. And I'm with you. I think regardless of how people feel politically, socially, I think, you know, this country could do kind of getting back to that feeling of how we all felt on 9/12. We hope to see that in the future, but certainly a day that had a great impact on all of us, especially us here in the tri-state area.
Absolutely, absolutely. And certainly on this day in wrestling history, folks, takes us back to 1995, Pat, where Monday Night Raw and the new WCW Monday Nitro went head-to-head for the very first time in what we all have come to know is the infamous Monday Night War. Monday Nitro came on TNT from the fabulous Mall of America in downtown Minneapolis. We got to see Lex Luger show up on Nitro a day after being at a house show, I believe, in the Pacific Northwest for Vince McMahon. That was a startling thing for us as wrestling fans. Again, we're talking about the internet in its infancy here, okay? There wasn't social media. We were literally about 10 years away from having any social media, YouTube, Facebook. I mean, all we had was wrestling sites, and even that was a little dubious. But, hey, you know, that Monday night, Lex Luger showed up in a match between Ric Flair and Sting, and it changed the premise of how we looked at the wrestling community and the pro wrestling wars in the mid to late 90s. On Raw, we saw the newly turned heel British Bulldog take on Razor Ramon, and Shawn Michaels defended the Intercontinental Championship against Psycho Sid. And again, on Nitro, Hulk Hogan defended the World Heavyweight Championship that night. And I got to tell you, man, it was quite a momentous occasion in wrestling history to see that Raw and Nitro go head-to-head for the very first time, and what would create this unbelievable storyline for the better part of really until the end of 2001 when WCW folded and Vince McMahon bought it out.
Yeah, absolutely. Really historic time, nostalgic time in a lot of ways. You know, even you describing it definitely kind of took me back. I remembered a lot of it visually. Definitely something I don't think we're ever going to see again, no matter what happens, because AEW certainly had a chance, but I don't think they're ever going to get to that WCW level. But yeah, definitely a momentous occasion in history and something that really created a very, very special time in business.
Absolutely. On this day, also in wrestling history in 2016, WWE SmackDown brand presented their first pay-per-view of the new brand split era, right? Backlash. So in the main event that night, very good pay-per-view, folks. If you ever have a chance and you're at work or you want to kill some time.
Just regular Backlash? That was regular Backlash? It wasn't necessarily
regular
Backlash?
Yeah, it was regular Backlash, as I call it. It's still Backlash to me. But
not really.
Go on Peacock, folks. And again, if you can, you know, and what was a 2.5-hour pay-per-view, obviously it'll take you 6 hours to watch it with all the ads on Peacock. But
don't be a cheapskate.
There we go, yeah. In the main event, AJ Styles defeated Dean Ambrose to win the WWE Championship. Also, the two new SmackDown-specific championships were awarded for the first time. Becky Lynch won a six-pack challenge to become the brand's first women's champion, again, in the new brand split era. And, of course, the feel-good match of the night was Heath Slater and Rhino being victorious over the Usos in the finals of the tournament to be crowned the new SmackDown Tag Team Champions. I got to tell you, man, I've always been a Heath Slater fan. Got a chance to meet him at a meet and greet. Nice guy. You know, going into that fall and that pay-per-view, I got to tell you, man, you can tell the fans are solidly behind Heath Slater and Rhino. nice win there. Great work by the Usos, obviously. Great putting them over, obviously, and a great, great match. But those are our dates, folks, today in wrestling history on September the 11th. Pat, before we call it a day here, any final thoughts and what we got coming up here? What do you want our fans to look out for?
First and foremost, just want to send a big happy birthday wish to the Grateful Dead's own Mickey Hart. Turned 79 years old today. Also want to shout out Nate Diaz, who completed his contractual obligations with UFC last night in a matchup against Tony Ferguson. Nate has always been just a pioneer in business, one of the true iconoclasts in the history of MMA, and just a guy that I think UFC is going to miss. I look forward to seeing what he does in the future and where his career goes post-UFC, and maybe even see him back in the UFC. Just want to send a shout-out to all my sponsors, Plan B, Trojan. Also want to send a shout-out to Impossible, Beyond Beef. I don't see what's funny here. I'm shouting out my sponsors, okay?
There you go.
And the Children's Aid Society. I'm really glad they made it. also keep an eye out on the Instagram for child actors. We got some shows coming up, namely one on September 24th at Crate 43 in Union City. It's going to be the child actors, Chip the Plug, and Neon Funeral. Definitely going to be another good show. A lot of great vibes there. Hope to see you out there. I saw the professor in the mosh pit last time. He got a mean helicopter kick. You don't want to mess with him in the pit. Don't let the suits fool you, folks. He gets pretty wild in the pit there. But, thank you for the continued support to all the listeners out there. Just looking forward to answering some more questions, even if they're stupid, because the vast majority of people are stupid. And keep on coming back for more. We'll be here. Thanks.
The PBR Superstar said it beautifully. Folks, again, check out Real Talk with Fernando Uribe on Monday nights live on Jersey First TV via YouTube, on Facebook Live via StreamYard, and also now on LinkedIn. Great add-on by StreamYard to make it available on LinkedIn. Folks, great, great traffic, all organic. Shout-out to U.S. Representative Josh Gottheimer out of the 5th Congressional District, pretty much overseeing Bergen County and parts of Warren and Sussex County. Had the opportunity to meet with him this past weekend at a Hispanic media event breakfast, since Hispanic Heritage Month begins next week. And who'd have known that a prominent Democrat representative in the House of Representatives and his staff find Real Talk with Fernando Uribe to be compelling television on Monday night. So maybe a little something to learn for all these other so-so jabroni journalists in New Jersey, but I'm grateful for that. And tune in, folks. Again, tomorrow, Monday, September the 12th at 6 p.m., we have Republican strategist Jeanette Hoffman on the show. A lot of great campaigns she's worked on. What to expect with the midterms coming up now in less than really 2 months, and what's going on in the political climate in New Jersey, that and much more. Folks, always tune in on Monday nights via Real Talk with Fernando Uribe on Jersey First TV. And folks, again, without you, our loyal listening audience, this show would not be possible. So always write to us, workinthemarks@gmail.com. Keep the questions coming. Again, shout out to everybody who takes the time to write and to listen. Without you folks, again, this show would not be possible. So, again, keep the comments coming and the questions, workingthemarks@gmail.com. Also, make sure you follow us on Instagram @working_the_marks. And, of course, make sure you check out our own Instagram. Check out the PBR superstar Patrick Rivera @PattyRican. That's PaddyRican. You can check out my own Instagram as well when it's not being shadow banned by the scumbag Mark Zuckerberg @TheFernandoZone. And also check us out on Twitter, folks. You can check out the great PBR @PatrickSKVM. And also check out my own Twitter, @TheFernandoZone. Again, when Jack Dorsey, that scumbag, isn't shadow banning us on there. And also make sure you like us on Facebook, folks. Working the Marks, easy to find. Shout out to D Rotten for administrating our pages, for getting us on Google Podcasts, and getting us on Spotify. You can always check out all our episodes at www.blogtalkradio.com/workinthemarks. You can listen to the episodes and download them free of charge from any PC, Mac, smartphone, and tablet. Folks, he is New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, the great PBR superstar, Patrick Rivera. I am New Jersey's premier award-winning journalist, the professor for Nandy Rebay. And always remember, every single week, nobody does it better than us because we're always working the marks here on Blog Talk Radio. Folks, enjoy the rest of your week. We'll see you later on for the latest episode of Working the Marks, always here on Blog Talk Radio. Always forget, let's keep on talking.
Jersey's premier journalist, the Professor Fernando Uribe, and New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, the TBR superstar Patrick Rivera.